This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And this is Alice Jovich from Arlington, Texas, and you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 22nd, episode 1088. This episode is brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference and the North American Trail Ride Conference National Convention, February 20th through 22nd, 2015. Good morning, Horse World.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're out. We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us here on Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek, of course, and I have Alice here who's with us the third Thursday of every month. And, of course, we're talking trail riding today. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning, Glenn. Good morning, Jen. How are you guys today?
We are terrific. It's so good to have you here. It's supposed to be in the 70s here in Florida today, so we're having a good day. We can go trail riding. We can go trail riding. I don't know about the rest of you. But actually, it's been, from what I've been hearing from friends around the country, it's been kind of mild in places. They've been able to get out and do some riding. So that's been kind of nice. Now, you're in Texas where it can be anything. So are you warming up a little? Or?
Oh, we were. We had beautiful weather yesterday and the day before. All the days that I've had to work, it's been gorgeous. And today it's raining, and they said by morning we may have snow.
Yeah, there you go.
Of course.
It always works out that way. The days you have off, it sucks. The days you work, it's beautiful weather. Just works like that.
Yep.
It's one advantage to working for yourself is you can sort of play with that a little bit. That is one advantage to it. The disadvantage is not having a regular paycheck. So that's the disadvantage to it. I guess you have to weigh those two, right?
Right. Well, it usually works out okay. So... But it's just today is just dreary, and it's my day. I have to drive the furthest to see all my clients, so it's just going to be kind of eh.
Yeah, exactly.
One
of those. It's a Thursday. Thursday's one of those days where it's kind of just, you know, I listen to a radio show that they call it the gateway to the weekend, and that's kind of true, isn't it? Thursday's just that day you go through to get to Friday.
Absolutely, and I don't work on Friday, so... It's my Friday.
Oh, that's even better for you.
Yeah.
Well, Jennifer, do you have an on today's show? What's coming up?
What's coming up on today's North American Trail Ride Conference episode? Well, Marjorie Shankier reports back about her first experience as a ride manager. Annette Griffin stops by to talk about why it's so cool to be riding the biggest horse on the block. And rounding out our Thursday, Aaron Glassman has a look at what's coming up at the NATRC National Convention. So stay tuned for the free folks.
I'm excited to talk to Annette today because she's got Percheron Paint Cross. And everybody knows how I'm partial to Percherons. But a Percheron Paint Cross, that's like the ideal from what I'm seeing here. How cute can you get?
Oh, she's a really awesome horse. She's pretty neat to be around. She doesn't seem to know how big she is. And she's kind of one of those horses that wants to curl up in your lap.
You know, we were talking about it before this. Jennifer and I were talking about it before the show. Percherons kind of have that pony look to them, whereas the Clydesdales and even the Belgians kind of get a little bit clunkier and longer legs and lankier, and Percherons seem to be more, you know, they just have a pony look to them, and their faces are even more pony-like. They're just a little different than the other draft breeds, which is why I think I like them. You know. Of course, I'll take any big draft horse. I think they're all cool.
They're pretty cool.
So now, what have you been riding? Have there been any shows? What's up?
Marjorie managed the competition we had the first weekend of January, and it was in Houston at the 7IL Ranch, and it was wet, and it was cold, and we all finished. Everybody did great. My horse and I had a really nice ride, and actually riding during the ride, the weather was decent. It was just the night before, like getting to the ride, my truck still bears the mark of all the mud from the road getting there. And it was just, it's been raining in Houston a bunch. And so it was foggy. The trails were fine because they're super sandy. But it was just, you know, everywhere you walked, it was wet. And I had bought plexiglass for my horse trailer because I had decided that I was going to turn the back of my horse trailer into a nice place to sleep. Well, it worked pretty well, except that the wind blew the rain at just the wrong angle. And even with the tarps and the plexiglass, the bottom of my mattress still got wet because it kind of rained in under the mattress.
This is why we don't camp.
Well, after the ride was over, I was actually parked next to the lady that I had bought my trailer from, and she has since moved up to a gooseneck. And I stood there and I said, love this trailer. It's time for a gooseneck. And I told my husband, I said, this is it. I'm done. The next time I camp, I'm going to have a place to sleep. And so I went home and got on Craigslist and Facebook and whatever else it took to find a trailer, and found a really nice steel gooseneck that someone had built out a little living space into. And so I go pick it up next Sunday.
So you're going to have a dry place to sleep?
Yes, sir. And it's this awful color of blue, though. Annette Griffin says that it looks like there was a Smurf massacre inside the trailer. So we're going to have to paint.
Get a little paint out.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's going to be nice. It's got 6 feet, which sounds small, but it's actually quite big. So it's got like a couch and a bed and a lot of cabinets, and it's already all wired, and it's got a fuse box. I just have to plug it in, and you know, it's going
to
work.
Wow, you might even be able to have a little heater in there, too.
Oh, absolutely. And there's
spoiled.
An air conditioner. Yeah. Well, there's an air conditioner and a heater, a space for a heater. So it's going to be like
you
having
are.
A little home
be
away
spoiled.
From
home. You're going to be so spoiled. No more tents for you.
No more tents for me. I'm done. It's just, I don't know, because it wasn't the worst camping experience I've ever had. I don't know what it was about that particular time where I was just done. I think it's because the Suburban was so comfortable, and I had my little bed, and it was always dry, and I never got wet. And I think that I just realized how much work it was going to be, because I go in all weather, and I'm going to go whether the weather's bad or not. And I was just, it's like, you know, this is just silly. I should be able to do better than this.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Anytime you get a new horse trailer, it's fun.
It is. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun to get a new horse trailer. We live in horse trailer country down here. There must be 12 horse trailer dealerships within 5 miles of us. And, I mean, thousands of horse trailers. Used, new, doesn't matter. There are just tons of them here. And I noticed the other day I drove by, and there were tons of people in there, too, because all the horse people are in Ocala right now. So this is, I bet you it's like their Christmas. You know, when the horse people show up for 2 months, that's when the trailer dealers down here actually make some money.
Sure.
But, they've been quite busy, that's for sure. We're going to have to look into that, too. Our trailer's getting kind of old and starting to look like a Craigslist trailer now. So we might have to do something about that soon.
Well, I looked at a couple of dealers just for fun, because someone had suggested that, you know, if I wanted to finance, I could probably – you know, a lot right now, a lot of people are trading their trailers in and getting upgrading or downgrading. And
right.
The dealer showed me a Trails West trailer, and it was everything I could have ever wanted in a trailer. We got in it. I mean, it wasn't particularly fancy, because I've seen some really fancy ones, but it had a nice bed. It was tall, had a couch that pulled out, had a little stove. You know, it had a bathroom shower combo thing. It had a walk-through door. And he says, well, it's only $20,000. And I was like, that's not bad. My husband's like, only 20? And I'm like, well, you've seen some of the trailers that my friends drive. But
that's
only
right.
20.
They're 50.
Or 80. Or I have a friend who's selling one for 88 right now. So, yeah.
Oh, good Lord. What's that?
It's huge, wow. And it has slide outs. And I have a friend who's not selling her trailer, but she's got this Lakota trailer that's got two slide outs. They call it the Texas Ballroom. And I'll go to her trailer sometimes to give her massages. And it's big enough when she pulls. I mean, it's bigger than some of the spaces I work in for with my clients.
I have noticed that. I always wondered why horse trailers didn't have the slide outs, because it seemed to that because of there's such a little space for the living quarters, that slide outs would make a lot of sense. But now I've noticed that at the trailer dealerships that slide outs are becoming a thing now.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe you noticed that before I did, but I just started to notice more and more slide outs now. And it does make sense. I mean, because you are limited. It's not like some of these big campers with fifth wheel campers where you have all the space in the world. You are limited on space.
Right.
So it does make sense to have the slide outs.
One of the trailers that one of my friends has, the company evidently went out of business, but their trailer, the horse part is one height, but then when you get into the living quarter part, the roof is actually on a slope and it gets taller so that you can sit up in bed, which is pretty cool.
Sort of looks like a fifth wheel then. The fifth wheels have that sloping
sort of
top.
Yeah.
Cool.
So
here we are, trailer talk on Thursday morning.
I know. It's just so exciting as I sit here looking at the reins thinking, I'll be comfortable wherever I go.
Now, one thing you're going to have to do when you get this trailer is check the wiring. We had that discussion the other day. Wiring is always screwed up in trailers. And if it's a used trailer, the wire is messed up. Just count on it.
That's probably true, yes.
Yeah. You want to check that. Well, now we also are going to be doing an NATRC tip of the month.
Yes. Yes. Well, this tip kind of is born out of an incident that happened to us in December. My daughter's horse, who has always just, she's just a really easy horse to take care of. You know, she's just laid back. She doesn't have any vices. She's the low horse in the herd, so she's not ever running anybody off their food. And we had pulled her out and we're feeding her. She was all by herself. No one was chasing her or bothering her. And she started to choke. And I've always wet my horse's food just a little bit because my horse tends to want to choke. But she had a really bad choke. And we ended up having to have the vet out, and they had to tube her, and then she had to be on antibiotics, so they were worried she was going to have pneumonia. I mean, it was just a huge problem. So, like I said, I've always wet my horse's food a little bit. And when it rides, we always, like, we soak our horse's food a lot of times to get some extra water into them. But now that's kind of become part of our daily routine. But when we're in competition, we never, almost never feed the food dry, partly because the horses can choke and partly because we want them to take in all that extra water that they can. Some horses don't drink very well in competition, but they all like to eat. So if you can soak beet pulp or alfalfa cubes or, you know, their regular food and you can make a big mash out of it, then a lot of times the horses will end up having better hydration scores because they're kind of being forced to drink water that they wouldn't have chosen to drink on their own. The other thing to be aware of, though, is if you do make a big soupy mash for your horse and it doesn't drink from the bucket as much, that's not necessarily a need for concern because you've given them extra water in their food. And so they may not drink as much out of their bucket, but you don't have to worry because you know they consumed the water, you know, that half a bucket or so of water with their feet. The horse my daughter is riding this year, his name is Oliver Queen. He doesn't drink at rides at all at the trailer. He'll drink on the trail, but like we've had him camping before and he doesn't touch his bucket of water. But if you give him a couple of buckets of different feed and you fill it full of water, he'll slurp down the water to get to the food in the bottom. So, you know, it's kind of
That sound familiar, Glenn?
Yeah. Oh, does
Scooter,
Scooter
does
that
too?
Yes, or he spills the water and then gets to the food in the bottom.
Well,
you know, if he's
see,
at,
what,
if it,
yeah.
if he can tip the bucket over, he will tip the bucket over to get the food in the bottom.
Oh, that's what my horse does. My horse hates wet food. And so if I'm going to give him soaked food, I have to make sure it's completely soaked and that, like, all the water's gotten soaked in because he'll pick up those little round buckets and he'll fling it to all the, so the food's left. But at least that way it's already soaked up water. Or if you hang a bucket up like on the fence or something, he'll pick up the edge of the bucket with his teeth and drain the water out the back. It's like,
he's got that figured out, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a little smart.
I don't want that crap water. I want the good stuff.
Exactly. Sorry. With the buzzer. So, but that's what we have going on as far as my tip of the month. It's just the extra water always comes in handy, and you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alfalfa cubes are perfect for that.
Yes.
You can make them really, really, really soupy, and the horses still eat them. Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes the horses will bob for apples. We do that at Halloween. We have a competition sometimes where we'll do different kinds of we will play games with the horses, and one of the games is bobbing for apples, and we'll put a bunch of apples in the water to see how many apples the horse will get, because they inevitably drink while they're getting the apples. So it's just kind of, you know, just something to do. So some horses will fall, whatever tricks they'll fall for to get extra water in them. And
yeah, exactly.
Another watering tip that I learned from Johnny Jewell, who's been on the show before, was she posted an article one time about, instead of just leaving hay in the trailer when you're traveling, to make a big soupy bucket of mash and leave it hanging in the trailer. And the horses will suck on that while they're driving, and they'll stay better hydrated. They won't necessarily drink while they're in the trailer, but they might eat a big, you know, wet mash of beet pulp and alfalfa and some feed.
Yeah, I never heard of anybody doing quite that, where there's actually food involved while traveling like that, other than hay.
That's a good idea, though. Especially if you teach them at home how to do it, you know? It's like, I know how to do this. Yeah.
Well, I always feed mine in the trailer. A lot of times when we're going somewhere, I always make a big bucket of feed while I'm getting everybody caught up in the morning, and they load up and their feed's there, and they'll slurp on that and go down the road. Now, my gelding will sometimes not finish it because, again, he doesn't really like the wet stuff. So, you know, and I have to balance that with the fact that he will sometimes choke. It's kind of tricky.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That
would be harder for our horses, Glenn, because they each get 2 cups of food, so it wouldn't last until the end of the driveway.
Right, no, it wouldn't last until the end of the driveway, right. That's
Less
true.
But, so,
that is
good
true.
Idea.
So,
very good. Very good. Well, Jennifer is going to be getting our first guest on here. You had sent over an article about winter riding safety and dangers. Can you kind of just give us a Reader's Digest version of it?
Sure. This article had it was a list of things. It said, while beautiful, winter can be slippery and cold. And they said the most obvious danger in the wintertime for you and your horse is hypothermia. I know we don't really have to worry about hyperthermia in Texas, and nor do you in Florida. But
it's not really a problem here.
No. So, but hypothermia can be a real problem. You know, for the rider, I'm thinking more than the horse, because horses are better at having greater, you know, they're comfortable at 40 or less. So, you know, having they don't get cold as easy, and if they're moving. But, you know, I can see a rider having some problem with frostbite or whatever on their hands or face if it's super cold, like if you were to go to Alaska, say. So, and then one of the other things is that, well, sometimes it'll be beautiful and snowy, but there's ice underneath the snow. And a horse with shoes on can get ice and snow balled up under their hooves and have trouble with the, sliding on the ice. I mean, I haven't lived in a cold climate like that in a long time, but I know in Iowa, my horse would get balls of ice stuck up under his feet, and it would make it just treacherous to walk across the pasture, much less ride. So, and I've heard that you can spray like cooking spray under their feet and make it so that the ice falls out, but I've never tried that. So
yeah, we used to do oil of some kind. I can't remember what now. But, yeah, we used to try all those tricks. I think everybody's tried all those different tricks for keeping the ice balls out. Jennifer, do you remember what we used to use to keep the ice balls out?
Well, I found that old-fashioned lard or Crisco worked better for me than Pam spray. I think maybe because I could get it thicker on the bottom of their feet.
Mm. It stayed longer. Yeah.
Yeah, and one of the keys to that was their feet had to be super, super, super clean, and like not just hoof pick clean, wire brush clean.
Okay.
And it seemed to work pretty decent. But
otherwise it's just stuck to the dirt otherwise and it comes off.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So and then it says that one of the other dangers is like if it warms up after the snow and the ice and it's muddy, it may look like it's dried out on the top, but underneath is really slippery. Because I know we've all had that happen to here at home. It'll look dry on top and you step and you almost wipe out because it's really gooey underneath. Again, I don't really deal with that much here, but like I grew up in Missouri, and I can remember that I loved the snow, but I hated the melt because you have to walk across the field to go to the school bus or something, and your shoes would be covered in 5 inches of mud, and the horses get that stuck to their feet too, but they can also slip and fall if you're doing much more than a walk.
Gotcha. Yep, that's true. Yeah. And boy, I remember trying to pick the ice balls out, and some of them were just, you needed a jackhammer.
You spent a lot of time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, I wish we had had the hoop pick we have now back then, because this one doesn't bend. So that would have been nice.
Oh, yeah. I could see that would have been helpful to have something really sturdy, because I've bent hoof picks, like trying to put easy boots on and off before, and I'm like, okay, that one's not that one. Get rid of that one.
Yeah, exactly. We use the illuminated, what's it called, Jennifer? The
illuminated hoof pick.
The illuminated hoof pick, and they are so strong. Not only do they have the light, the hoof pick part is super strong. We've had ours for 3 years now and haven't had any trouble with it at all. It hasn't been at all. So, yeah, we love that thing. Illuminated hoof pick. There's your product of the day, okay?
There you go.
Illuminated hoof pick. Well, your first guest is ready.
All right. Hello, Marjorie.
Morning.
How are you doing today?
Well, I was just telling Jennifer that it's going to be a great day anyway. Whenever you wake up in the morning and you take your elbows and you put them out to your side and you don't hit the side of a coffin, it's going to be a good day. So go out and make it a great day or not. The decision is up to you. And it is cold and it's rainy. And we are snuggled up here in the bed with the dogs and the cats, and the fire is going in the fireplace, and the horses are out in their stalls munching their breakfast and out of the rain and out of the wind, so they're happy. So I think we're going to stick with this for a while this morning.
Oh, lucky girl. Lucky girl.
Yeah, I'm off today, so I'm finishing up all of my paperwork associated with my recent ride, our NATRAC ride that we had over the first of the year. And that was quite an event.
So you were on in November to talk about what it was going to be like leading up to it.
Uh-huh.
So now that it's over, tell us a little bit about your first management experience. What were some of the best experiences, and what were some of the worst experiences?
Well, I would say, of course, probably most anything, the anticipation and planning was really a highlight. It was just so much fun for months and months thinking about what we were going to do and how the ride was going to go and the prizes that we were going to give away and how it was going to be received and all of the planning of it. That was so much fun. But when it came to January the 1st on a Thursday, when we loaded up and went down to the 7IL Ranch in Cat Spring, Texas, it was cold and rainy and muddy, and we had already had one big controversy. We had an AERC, an endurance ride, that was supposed to have been put on that day. And that would have meant 80 horses going down those trails and tearing up those trails. And it would have been an absolute mess for our NATRAC riders coming in on Friday. But as we got down there, we found out that the AERC people had wisely decided that it was really too cold and wet and rainy for them, and they had canceled. So when we got down there, the trails were pristine, and it is a very sandy area. So the sand actually packed down, and the trails were in pretty good shape. And, of course, 7IL is so wonderfully marked, and the trails are so wonderfully groomed that we didn't really have to get out and mark trail or ride the trails the day before the ride. That being said, it was still very cold and wet and rainy, and although we didn't have any ice, points to the north, including where you live, Alice, did have some ice, didn't it? Didn't you have to skitter in on a little ice?
No, they said it was going to be icy, but since we came down on Thursday, any ice they had, we missed. And Peter said it was fine when he came Friday morning. So.
Okay. Well, nevertheless, it did scare off quite a few riders. We had had 30 that had signed up, but starting Thursday and into Friday, we began getting the calls of cancellations, which, you know, you just can't, you can't judge that. You can't say anything about that because it's every rider's responsibility to decide for themselves if they want to load their horses up and get out on those highways and travel with their horses. So, you know, I completely respected anybody's decision not to come to the ride. So as it turned out, though, we still ended up with about 20 riders, which was good. We made the ride. My main concern was that my vet judge, Dr. Patrick Regier, was coming in from Kansas, and he was going to be encountering some ice. But, you know, a Kansas veterinarian, he's used to being out in it. So I had faith in him, and sure enough, about 1 o'clock Friday afternoon, my husband looked down the road and said, "I believe that truck has Kansas license plates on it." So, whoop, we had a ride. I just knew then, well, we're going to have a ride. And we certainly did. And people came in, and luckily, I think everyone got electricity, water and electricity sites. So we had heat. And although it was just a terrible rainy day Friday, by 5 o'clock in the morning on Saturday morning, the rain stopped, and the riders were able to go out on trail dry on Saturday. So it turned out good anyway.
And then the sun came out on Sunday.
It did. It did. Now, we did have a new obstacle for
yes,
Natrack. We call it the flying. We call it the flying tent obstacle, don't we, Alice?
Yes, yes, we do.
Yes,
we need
we
to give Glenn a picture to put up.
Do you want to tell it, or do you want me to tell it?
I'll tell it since I was the one who was oblivious to it.
Okay.
Friday night sometime, I think that the neighbors said it was 2 in the morning or so, the tent that we had used to check out under had attached itself to my truck, and it was standing on end. It's this great big garage tent thing.
A big pavilion tent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the ends of it were standing up, and my truck had stopped it. And the horses on either side of us had, one of the horses had kind of spun around and come loose off her high tie and had woken up her owner. And the other side, the owner's horses, had gotten upset but not broken loose. And my horses never woke us up. We slept through the whole thing. I got out the next morning, and my neighbor says, do you see the tent attached to your truck? And I was looking the other direction, and I like, you know, it's just 5:30 in the morning. And I turned to the left, and, oh, wow, there's a garage-sized tent on my truck.
Right. Completely enveloping it like the glob, you know. It was like a scene out of the horror movie when they came and told me that Alice's truck had encountered the tent and that it had rolled through camp during the thunderstorm the night before. I thought to myself, okay, here's my very first incident report and insurance claim. So here we go. And I walked up and I saw this huge tent on top of Alice's truck, and there was a dent in the back of her, on the back side of her truck. And I thought, oh, Lord. And I'm sure the windshield is just shattered, and I'm sure it's just a big mess. But it took 8 of us to lift that thing off, and when we lifted it off, the windshield was intact, the truck was intact, and good Alice admitted that the dent in the truck was old, and I had not done it to her. So As it turned out, we did not have an insurance claim. Thank you, Alice. Thank you.
Now, the tent didn't look very good, but...
No, it didn't. It was something else. So we took pictures of it, and everybody, and the horses were great. I mean, nobody freaked out. Nobody ran off. Everybody did really good. We should have given them extra points, huh, Alice?
That's right. We decided my truck was a hero. My truck's name is Jeffrey. And so Jeffrey was a hero because he stopped the tent from running over any horses.
Yes, he did. And so that was our big new NATRAC obstacle is the flying tent obstacle. And as it turned out, everyone went down the trail. Everybody came back with the, what do they call it, the big one on the bottom. No big wrecks. Nobody came off. I think maybe one rider maybe had a little bit of an incident with the cows the next day, but no big problem. And so everybody finished, and we just had a great, great time. I enjoyed every moment of it. I appreciated those hardy souls that did come and did support our first NATRAC ride of the year. And as it turned out, I'm game. I think I'll jump back in and do another one sometime. I think thanks to my great – oh, my husband's laughing. My husband's screaming in the living room right now.
No.
I feel his pain. I feel his pain.
And thanks to my great secretary, Tanya Watkins, and her assistant, Annette Griffin, the computer work and the all of the records, everything turned out just perfect. So I couldn't have asked for a better set of volunteers and crew members to have helped me. I think that's the ticket, is getting yourself a really good team that you can give them their job, delegate it to them, and forget about it. My sister told me that I acted like I was severely ADD that day, running around going, squirrel, 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 because I was having to put out little fires, but beyond me, everybody else was in position. I had the best P&R team, Amy Martin and her family and friends. They just took that and just went with it. I never even heard a peep about any problems with P&R. Our judges did great. We had a new first-time horsemanship judge, Patty Hicks. She took her job very seriously and very carefully. And we had some judge secretaries that played at the very last minute, and Gail Munch and and my sister, Ermine Haley, she stepped up and was Patty's secretary. So they had never done that before, but they stuck right with their judges and took great notes. And so we had our award ceremony by 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon, and everybody was out of camp and safely home by that evening. So it was great.
Thank you so much, Marjorie. It was really awesome. And I'm glad you came back on to tell us how it went.
Yes, everybody give NATRAC a try. It's a lot of fun, and you'll really enjoy it. So thank you all for having me.
Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Marjorie. We appreciate you stopping by, and congratulations on a successful event. Anytime you're an event organizer and you can pull off the first one with only having a tent out of place, that's a pretty good deal. I mean, if all the riders, I love how she said all the riders went out and all the riders came back. That's also a good day, right? You know, it's when the horses come back without the riders that it tends to get interesting. But yeah, if they come back together, it's a good day. Well, now we're going to introduce our next guest, and I can't wait to meet her. So take it away.
All right, our next guest is Annette Griffin. Annette began riding NATRC in Region 6. Her first ride was in Missouri. She's originally from Texas, though, and she moved back to Texas several years ago, and that's when I met her. And she has been a trail master and a secretary helper and just kind of a general, if you need a hand with anything, Annette's your girl, because she's just incredibly multi-talented. And she rode her spotted draft mare, Tally, this year. And she's here to talk a little bit about being the first ever spotted draft horse national winner for NATRC. Hello, Annette.
Hey. Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm getting wet. It's raining.
Now, Annette, I have to start this one because I'm a Percheron guy. I've owned a couple
really?
Percherons.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've owned a couple Percherons over my time, 18 plus hands. And I saw the picture of your Percheron paint. And, how cute can you get? I mean, the Percheron paint is really – I actually saw a driving team one time that was draft paint cross. I don't know if it was Percherons, but they had four of them that were very much alike with their markings, and they were pulling a wagon with four of them, and that was really cool. But yours, Callie, is really cute.
Yes, she is. Of course
she took
cute.
A lot
Hello?
Of the – she has a lot of the Percheron in her, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does. She has, actually, her conformation is a lot like a Percheron, but she's really kind of, if you see her from a distance, because she's kind of, I don't know, symmetrical or something, she doesn't look like she's going to be very big until you get up close to her, and then it's like, oh, okay, what are you? But I fell in love with a spotted draft one time when I was getting into horses, and I was perusing all of the websites, and I saw a spotted draft, and I'm like, oh, that's my dream horse. And never thought for a million years that I'd ever actually own one. So it's been fun, a lot of fun.
Now, how big is she?
According to you, with 18 plus hands, Callie's short. She's a little over 17.
Oh, that's pretty good, though. That's pretty big. She looks big. She's, you know, we were talking about it earlier in the show. Percherons tend to have more of a pony look in the way they're built and their face than
yeah.
the other breeds
yeah.
of draft, which look more bulky and more big horse-ish.
Right.
Whereas the
yeah.
Percherons, and I think that's what you were talking about, when you look at them from a distance, they kind of look pony-ish until
yeah.
you get up beside them, and, you know, then you realize that this is one big horse with pipe-like feet. You know,
yeah.
so... Well, I love her. I love
nephew,
the look. I love the look of her.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, she's pretty cool. But my nephew.
Now, did she get the brain of the Percheron? Did she get the brain of the Percheron or the paint?
It's a toss up. Some days she has the brains of a Percheron, and some days she has the brains of a Shetland pony.
A 17-plus hand Shetland pony.
Yeah. Or as I said one time on her very, very first Matrack ride going out, our reins broke as we were just leaving. And for some reason at that particular ride, everyone thought that they just needed to run. So here's my new horse, fresh at this, thinking that, oh, we're supposed to run and the reins broke. And I was like, I'm riding a fire-breathing dragon, and now she's not. She's a little pussy cat, but my nephew calls her the dinosaur, so, you know, I ride the dinosaur.
Well, she definitely is cute. Did you did you get her when she was young, or?
I saw Callie right after she was born. A friend of mine. She was born to a friend of mine. And I always teased her that, oh, you have my dream horse. That's my horse. When do I get to take her home? And I mean, and for like 3 years, that was kind of a running joke that, you know, well, I'm going to come get my horse now. And as circumstances change sometimes, I got a phone call from my friend, and she said, were you serious? And I said, about what? Because, you know, I talk a lot. And she said, about taking Callie. And, I said, there's no way I could ever afford that horse. And she said, yes, you can, because I know you would take good care of her. And that's how I ended up getting Tally. And I got it for a right price of $300.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
I was expecting 3,000 plus for that horse.
Yeah, and normally it would be, but she knew that I was in love with that horse, and so it was just one of those things that it was just meant to happen, and that's how I ended up getting her and haven't regretted it at all.
So I think the first time I met you was one of the first times you took Tally out on the trail, wasn't it?
I think so. No, well, the first time we met, was I was on Bella. And then
oh, that's right. You were in an A-track, right?
That, and yeah. Then one of the other times, I think that we actually, did we camp or just meet or something? I was on Tally, and that's when they went swimming.
Yeah, we were
camping.
We
found
were camping.
Tally liked to swim. Yeah, and
yeah.
I found out Tally liked to swim.
And she was already trained
that.
At that point. But she was already trained at that point. But then that was, I mean, she was only 4 or so at that point. But she was, you know, she
like
was still.
Like 3.5, 4.
Yeah, she was really young.
Yeah.
And, but then from there, you've done different things with her to make her a little more pliable and, you know, because she would be good unless there was a crisis. Like, you know, like what are some of the things that she would do if she got scared that she doesn't do anymore?
Well, one of the biggest things is, you know, and being such a big horse, and when she would get scared, she would get high. And when you have a 17-hand horse that gets high, you know, that's a really scary thing. And she would bolt forward just a little bit and then go to bucking. Not a good combination. And that
no,
was
it's not. That's a long way down. The ground hurts more from that height.
It's a very long way down, and I can attest to that on several occasions. I've slid down her. I've flown off of her. I've probably taken every exit there was. And I am no trainer, and I know that I am no trainer. So I look to the professionals to help me out, and they did. And now whenever she gets scared, she pretty much just, like, stops and waits, snorts, and, like, and her head will come up. But she waits now to find out, okay, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And we work through it. So I don't have the fear of the bucking thing happening anymore. Which is a good
so
thing.
Who was it that helped you with her? What trainer?
The trainer that has had her most recently that I just absolutely love is Top Ramirez with Top Horse Solutions down in Killeen. And they have just been phenomenal. And they worked with Tally to find her brain and how to communicate with her. And, I mean, just awesome work. So I can't say enough good stuff about them for getting my horse to where I'm very comfortable getting on her and heading down the trail.
What are some of the advantages of riding a horse her size? Like, how is it easier to compete? I mean, there's got to be some, right?
There actually are some advantages. One of the big ones is you can actually see what's going to be happening up ahead and relay it back.
And if anybody gets in your way, you just run their ass over. That's the other advantage.
Exactly. You know, we can just step right over them, step on them, and not even, you know, worry about it. But,
those Shetland ponies you were talking about, they just go under her.
Yeah.
So,
no, actually she would be no good at team sorting because the cows would be able to go right under. But, some of the other advantages, she's got long legs. So when she's in, like, an extended walk, everyone else is having to trot or do a canter to keep up. So, you know, that's an advantage. And she has a big movement, which is good and bad because it lets other horses know we're coming up. But like I think it was Johnny Jewell said one time, I thought the earth was shaking behind me because we were cantering and coming up behind them. And she said it was like the earth was moving. And one of the other really good things about the draft type breeds is their heart rate. If they're not overly taxed and they don't need that heartbeat, they'll just drop it. So when you're at a PNR and they come in and they start resting, their heart rate drops really, really fast, so their PNRs are usually really good. So that's an advantage.
Have you had any experience riding her much in the heat yet? Do you know how she's going to do in the heat?
Well, see, and that was what I was going to say about would be a disadvantage because she's a draft horse, and so she's more thick-muscled. So I have not competed her in the heat, and I'm not sure that I'm really going to plan on doing it. She's in good enough shape. I'm sure that she would be fine. I don't know that I'd be fine, but that's just one of the things that is something to take into consideration on the draft breeds, just because of the thick muscles and, you know, things like that, that they can get hotter. But with her conformation and being in shape, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal, but, you know, I just will plan accordingly as to how I feel. Another thing that would be is a disadvantage is that one of the obstacles, we had to do a ground mount, and I was like, pass. I'm too old. Pass. But, you know, other than that, she does eat a lot, and everyone's always amazed at how much she can eat. But, you know, it's fun.
Talk a little bit about that. Let's explain what you mean by eat a lot.
You know, whenever you're doing these competitions, and I'm sure y'all talked about, you know, feeding your horse and keeping them hydrated and things like that, you know, that's always a concern. Well, most of us will feed like a watered, you know, or a mash to help them hydrate and fill up. Alice, what size, how many gallons bucket do you think that is that I use?
I think it's bigger than 5 gallons, isn't it?
I think so, too. Anyway, it is almost full to the top with a mixture of alfalfa beet alfalfa Timothy pellets, beet pulp, some of her grain ration, and then maybe sometimes I'll sprinkle just a spattering of sweet feed, and then I sneak her electrolytes in there, and I make this mash, and it is probably a soupy 5 or 6 gallons that she'll eat in the mornings. And I've had other competitors say, well, I know it's time to wake up when I hear. And they know it's Tally eating. But
yeah,
it seems to work for her.
There's a disadvantage to a horse that has to eat that much, because what comes out the other end is also equally large.
This is true.
Now, we used to feed about a bale of hay a day. Is that about right for you?
You know, she will eat somewhere between, if I did not give her the mash, yeah, probably about a bale a day.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know, when we're competing. When we're not competing and she's at home, she does not eat all that much more than the other horses.
Gotcha.
But,
and they can take, you know, they have a habit too. You know, they're naturally big, so it's hard to tell sometimes. But they have a habit too of getting overweight. I mean, they can eat too much just like any other horse and get too fat.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, because they tend to be easy keepers, most of them. So, mm-hmm. you know, they will eat whatever you put in front of them for the most part.
Well,
yeah.
And she also drinks a ton. I would say she also drinks a
yeah.
lot.
Yeah, she does.
When,
like
when we
50
go camping.
Gallons in the course of a weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that was one of the considerations of, you know, if we're going on a camping, you know, camping or competing on a place that does not have a water source, I typically have to go by myself because of carrying.
Uh-oh.
I think we lost her. I don't know what happened. Annette, are you still there?
Well, what she was going to say is that she has to
she's
go
gone.
By herself. Yeah.
All right, she's gone.
Oh,
well, we're about to
wrap
with her anyway. So, yeah, I don't know what happened there. She just lost her signal, I think.
What she was going to say is that she, when we go camping together, I'll take a 55-gallon barrel for my 2 or 3 horses, and I have some 5-gallon jugs too. She will go through her whole 50-gallon drum and still have to use mine as well.
Wow. Yeah, they do. I mean, you do have to think about all those things, and you're right, even manure and the whole thing. Everything is just bigger. We were at the Percheron convention here last year, the world convention for the Percherons up in Massachusetts, and that is one thing, the manure piles are bigger, that's for sure. Everything is bigger.
She said she's sorry she didn't know what happened, and thanks a lot for having her on.
All right, no problem. All right, well, let's take a break for our song, and we're going to have a little Stephanie Quayle, who's a horse girl. She will be entertaining at Road to the Horse here coming up in a couple of months at the end of March in Kentucky in Lexington at the Horse Park. And I have her song, That's What I Am Talking About. And we'll be right back after that.
Disappeared. I got a mason jar full of something clear to take a swig and chase it back with a beer.
That's horse girl Stephanie Quayle. You can find her at stephaniequayle.com. That was the song. That's What I'm Talking About, in case you couldn't guess from the lyrics what the song title was. And she is terrific. I'm looking forward to actually meeting her in person at Road to the Horse here coming up in a couple of weeks. Now, we also wanted to mention that tomorrow is Really Bad Ads Day, so get your Really Bad Ads in. It's sponsored by EquityMFG.com, of course, the Flex and Fork and the Manure, and the Shake and Fork. And the Flex and Fork or the Shake and Fork could easily handle any draft horse poop because they just don't break. You can submit your ads to Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com. Today is the last day to get them in for tomorrow. And what we're doing is everybody that submits an ad during the month will be put in a hat. And at the end of the month, we're going to draw for a winner of the Flex and Fork. So they'll win a Flex and Fork at the end of every month. And then we're putting all the names in of everybody submitted ads during the year, and we're going to pull that out. And at the end of the year, we're going to have a big prize of a Shake and Fork worth almost $300. So you're going to want to get your ads in and get out. Besides, you're helping out a very funny segment, one of the most popular segments we do here on Horses in the Morning. So we hope you join us tomorrow by sending in ads. Just get on Craigslist. It takes, what, about 2 minutes to find bad Craigslist ads, right? So it doesn't take any time at all, and we look forward to having you submit them. So we'll be back here tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. with Jamie to do that. Well, our next guest is ready.
Our next guest is Erin Glassman. She has been in NATRC for a very long time, and I had a little bio for her, which I now can't find. So I will let her tell us. I will let her do her own introduction. I apologize for that. Welcome, Erin.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good.
All right.
Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I've been in NATRAC since 2006. I decided to join up as their trail advocacy chair here about 4 years ago. And then last year I got elected president for my region. In the meantime, I also work outside of this fun time on the trails, and I work in healthcare, and my husband and I have two little children that we like to wrangle. So in the off hours. That's about the gist of it. Yeah, I'm very busy.
Well, and then on top of all of these things, you became an organizer for the NATRC National Convention.
Yes, I did. So,
yeah.
Yes, that's correct. So I'm one of the co-chairs with Sarah Rennie up in Nebraska.
So tell me a little bit about what that is and the, some of the details about it, like when and where, etc. So,
all right. National Convention for North American Trail Ride Conference is taking place in Kansas City this year. The dates are February 20th and 21st. We'll have our Region 6 awards on Sunday, the 22nd. We've got several great speakers lined up for it. Both days are filled with education, fun, and just getting a chance to visit with some of our members from across the nation. We have Dr. Jay Merrow from AERC, the American Endurance Ride Conference, coming out to speak with us. She's going to be talking about pre-purchase exams, and then also she's going to give us a speech on how to move up your challenge, how to increase your game, whether that darting in competitive trail, moving from novice to competitive pleasure, or from competitive pleasure up to open. And this can also be applicable to moving from competitive trail up to endurance as well. So just how to increase your challenge within yourself. We also have Lynn Clifford, who's coming from New Mexico. She has a degree in psychology, and she's also a riding instructor. She's going to be discussing riding and fear within yourself. A lot of us have show jitters, per se, for obstacles. Sometimes we get pretty tense before we start going up to the judges and performing these obstacles that they ask for us. So she's going to talk about how we can address those issues within ourselves, as well as talking about overcoming your fear after having an accident. Myself, for instance, I've had a pretty significant accident here a couple years ago, and some of the issues that I've had to deal with in terms of overcoming the fears of what happened during that accident and building my confidence back, I think this will be a very interesting topic for those of us who have come through something like that. And there are a lot of us that have done, have had some pretty bad wrecks. We also have Mary Hansen, who is one of our members. She's been competing for the past couple years. She is formerly of the National Park Service, and she'll be talking over trail advocacy and dealing with parks and landowners when we're planning our competitive rides. We also have a couple other speakers. Trisha from Transwest Trailers in Belton, Missouri, will come and talk about living quarters, and Denise Ferris will be coming in and talking about legal issues with our equine friends.
It sounds really interesting, all the different topics.
Yeah, kind of a good variety of things this year. We also will have some vendors out there, and I wanted to mention that it's not too late if you have a small equine-related business or even glisses or things that, you know, all of us enjoy looking at or buying. We still have room for vendors if people want to come in, and they can contact us through the national website if they're interested in doing that. I think the deadline technically is January 30th, but I think we could probably extend that if people really came into us a little bit later than that.
And there's also going to be a raffle, They always have silent auction items. So if anybody wanted to donate items for the silent auction, I know that Margaret Reynolds is in charge of that. She would really enjoy having more donations of things.
Absolutely. We've got some really great packages. We've got a couple of really nice baskets that recently were donated by Chamois Butter, which is a nice product for those of us who ride long distance. I won't go into the details of that, but if you've been riding long distance, you know that we have issues.
I wasn't going to ask.
Yeah, I was afraid.
I kind of guessed.
Right. We don't need to go into the gory details here.
Now, Erin, and you did miss one of the most important things about having a convention in Kansas City: barbecue.
That's right.
Like
that's
an important item right there.
You betcha. And we are having the convention right on the Kansas City, Country Club Plaza, and there will be all sorts of dining opportunities out there. So I know
Absolutely.
Right around the corner, in addition to like Jack Stack, I think is really close. I think Gates Barbecue is really close. We've also got the Cheesecake Factory for those. Yeah, it's just a couple blocks away.
See, I grew up in Liberty, Missouri, and my dad used to take me to Gates. And I haven't been to Gates in probably 20 years, so.
It's pretty good stuff, yes. There's lots of different restaurants around to choose from.
When you're in a town like that, you wish there were 12 meals a day because you just can't fit it all in.
Absolutely.
You know?
No,
I go to the barbecue place and I want everything, you know. I just don't want to settle on one thing. I want everything.
Well, absolutely.
It's kind of cool to go to Kansas City as like a tourist because I grew up in Liberty, so we never stayed on the plaza. I never had any reason to go there to stay there. You know, and I am staying with a friend a couple days, but it'll be kind of neat just to be there and be able just to walk around and see it, you know, from adult eyes as opposed to going with my mom because I wasn't allowed to drive there.
Right. So. And when we live a place, we don't tend to see all the cool things. We just kind of go trudge to work and back and don't visit all the neat museums, et cetera.
Exactly. So what are some of the benefits of attending, especially like benefits if you haven't tried NATRC yet, what would be some reasons for people to come to check us out?
I think some of the benefits of coming to convention are, number one, kind of seeing what the competition is all about, both in the presentations and with discussing amongst the other competitors that are there. You don't have to be a member to come to the national convention. We definitely encourage people that have never even tried a competitive trail to come out because this is the perfect opportunity to talk over your game plan, like how to prepare, how to pack, how to get all of your things ready to go, how to condition, you know, what do you need to think about when you're coming to a ride. We're going to have people from all across the nation, which is one of the really neat things I think about NATRC, is that we'll have somebody coming from Alaska. We've got people from California. We've got people from Georgia, you know, everywhere across the United States. So I think that's one of the biggest perks, meeting new people from across the nation that you can connect with. I think it's also neat to network and figure out, you know, say you want to go ride in Kentucky. Well, you can probably meet somebody that's from there and can talk to you about their ride that they're putting on. And it's a great way to go explore a new park and have a set of trails that you can go on to and have a set map and have somebody watching out for you so you don't get too terribly lost. Now, I can't say that no one is going to get lost because because I'm guilty of that myself sometimes, but you have a higher chance of being found.
Now, Erin, you were speaking about trails different places, and you said your title again, and now I forget what it was. One of the things that you help with is the trail end of things, right?
Yes, Trail Advocacy Chair.
Yeah. Now, so is it getting harder? I mean, do you deal with, do you also work with the national organization there? I forget the name of that, too, that helps with trail conservation. Do you guys work at all on that, or you just work on it strictly from your competition ride standpoint?
What I try to do is coordinate the information that is out there to help us preserve our trails. If we don't have our trails, we don't have our competitions. If we don't have our trails, we don't have a chance to get outside of our own backyard. So that's something I think is just utmost to our sport and utmost to just being an equestrian. We need to have places to ride. I do work and listen to the presentations that the Equestrian Land Conservation Resource puts together. I also look at the information. And they have an excellent organization. They really work with private landowners and also public areas to help preserve our rights to enjoy the land that is our public area. I also have attended and kind of involved with the planning of the next, it'll be the National Equestrian Trails Conference. I don't think we have a set date for that next one just yet, but I've attended the past 2 to 3 times, and it is a really great place to learn about how we need to approach land management agencies and how we need to build our relationships with these entities to help preserve our rights. I think the biggest thing in saving our trails and our land is just developing relationships with those people around us, making sure that we're civil and that, we offer of ourselves to help preserve what is out there. So,
now, what's the biggest challenge to keeping the trails nowadays? Is it development? Is it insurance? Is it a combination of a little bit of everything?
I think it's a combination, a little bit of everything. There is a lot of conflict out there between trail users. I think there's so much animosity out in just the general public, not just on trails, about people have their one side and they tend to only see their one side. Well, I think what we all need to do is work together. We all have common interests. We all have common ground. We need to look at those kind of things and work towards building a relationship where we can all share that public land, because there is a finite amount out there. We're not going to get any more additional land except in maybe Hawaii when the volcanoes erupt and expand the island. But that's about the only example I could imagine.
And that's not really great riding for a while. So.
Probably
yeah,
not.
Wait for it to cool
I think
off.
The shoes would melt right off your feet.
Yes, that's right. That's a couple-year project right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, down here in Florida, we have the Florida Greenway, which mm-hmm. is a linear park that goes from the Gulf of Mexico to the Atlantic Ocean all the way across the state. And fortunately, they saw fit when they made it into a park, that they did put in. What they did that was really smart is they made the horse trails separate from the bike trails, separate from the hiking trails. So mm-hmm. they separated those three groups because they had the room to do it. And then it eliminated a lot of conflicts, because a lot of the conflicts you were talking about come from hikers, bikers, and trail riders, right? I mean, those are the three that always are in conflict, and especially the bikers and the trail riders. Those two seem to have more conflicts across the country than anywhere else. I can't tell you, we see every news article about a horse, and there are more articles from across the country about bikers and horse people colliding, literally colliding, but fighting over trails. And of course they blame each other. The bikers blame the horse people and the horse people blame the bikers. So it's a constant.
I think we all need to move away from the blame game, and I think a lot of the issues that come across with hikers and bikers and equestrians are just basically speed. The bikers can come across pretty fast. Also, horses can. We need to pay attention to our surroundings and pay attention to the other users and be good stewards for our own user group. Be friendly. try to build a good positive interaction each time you see somebody. And also education, you know. I mean, a lot of bikers don't have much experience with livestock. Typically, your bicyclists are going to be more of a town or a city type background versus equestrians tend to be more of a rural type background and have more experience dealing with animals. So education is really important on those user interactions. I do know of examples where users have the same trail and they get along fine, and it's good positive interactions. Now, you know, anytime you're on something that's 1,000 pounds that, you know, you don't really have complete control over their mind, you're going to have some issues like where you may have wrecks. And sometimes bicyclists also do not have control of their bikes. You know, everybody just needs to work better where they can learn to use those in conjunction on the same trails. So
I know. Yeah. I don't mind at all to share trails. There's a couple of places that I ride. One's in Arkansas near Bar 50 Ranch. There's a lot of ATVs and motorcycles there, and also their horse trails. And everyone I've met there, when they see the horses, I mean, they go out of their way to pull off the road, to be polite. And a lot of times we're like, please, just go on. It's fine. And our horses are good. And then there's another place I like to ride that has bicycles. And, yeah, they sometimes will zoom by, and sometimes the horses will spook, but I always look at that as an opportunity for training. And, you know, and then you know, the people are friendly enough. They didn't mean to spook my horse. They weren't being evil. You know, they weren't. I wish we could all just learn to get along, I guess is what I'm saying, because we all have so many more places to ride if we could
all,
especially the bicycles and the horses, because there's so many places that are good for both. And, like, my husband doesn't really ride his bike like he used to, but there was a time that, you know, if there was a place we could both go, he could have ridden his bike and I could have ridden my horse, and we could have gone out together. But, you know,
absolutely,
it's hard to find a place that allows both.
I know there's a lot of places that share trails that they do have signs that encourage, you know, the right-of-way, because every other user needs to give right-of-way to horses just because of the predator, prey, animal type situation. And so, I mean, educating people that haven't had that livestock background and knowing how to be around animals, as well as, you know, educating ourselves in terms of what we need to do ahead of time when we do come up to something that our horse may not have been exposed to, that's really key in our interactions.
And, you know, we're still dealing with people. So 80% of them are going to try really hard and be really good, and the other 20% are going to be jerks on both sides. So, you know. It's just the way it is. I mean, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. But, you know, we can always hope for the best.
Right. We can try and get through to that
20%. Yes.
Good luck, Aaron, getting through that 20%.
I know it. At least we can maybe turn it around for the positive for ourselves in that matter.
And, you know, I'm not just blaming the bikers here. We all know that 20% of horse people that are kind of jerks, too.
Yes.
So, I mean, it goes on both sides. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. So, you know, we live in an equestrian neighborhood, and for the most part, you know, it goes the same here. We live in an equestrian neighborhood. There's about 400 homes. So we have 17 miles of roads and 17 miles of trails. And, you know, we drive on the roads here all the time because there's not a lot of traffic. And we'll have 80% of the cars that go by, or the bicyclists or whoever that go by, will be very respectful, slow down and all that stuff. And then there's 20% who could care less and don't care if you have to jump off the road, you know. So and those people, you're never going to get through to those people.
I don't think so, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I think that's where training comes in, too. You know, you just have to make sure your horse is ready for that souped up car with the loud muffler that's not going to slow down on a back road.
Absolutely.
Just
right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, you know, if we're going to have our horses out on the trails, we do need to be like defensive drivers, you know, like on the highway, we kind of have to watch out for those 20% of drivers that are not paying attention and texting and, you know, all of that on the road. Do the same thing with our horses. We just need to train at home and make sure we have good communication with our horses and the ability to de-escalate a intense situation, I guess.
Interesting.
Well, tell us again, I really appreciate you being on the show today. It's been really interesting. And one more time, so that anybody who wants to come to the convention can find us, where can they find the information about the convention and let's say the dates and the location one more time?
Okay. If you are looking for more information, we do have all of the brochures posted on the North American Trail Ride Conference website, which is www.natrc.org. We also have some posts on Facebook, and I'm going to be emailing and Facebooking and trying to get more of this information out for those who haven't maybe caught it yet. We will be holding the conference at the Holiday Inn and the Country Club Plaza in Kansas City, Missouri. The dates are February 20th through the 22nd. 22nd is more the regional banquet for us. So basically the 20th and 21st for the speakers and all of the fun. Oh, and I did forget to mention Friday night we will be having a little bit of a bluegrass band coming out for us, the Wildwood Boys. Yeah, so that'll be fun to listen to. Just coming up here just a little over probably about a month. So
is the Country Club Plaza the one that has the statue of the pig sitting down? There's a whole bunch of statues in the plaza there. You look for it.
There's a lot of fountains.
You look for it. It's the only pig statue I've ever seen in a plaza. So you check that out.
I will check it out. I'm thinking
I want a picture of you
bell.
Guys with the pig, all right? I want a picture.
You
I want to see
betcha.
A picture.
Okay,
with the pig.
We'll do it.
Tell us and I'll hunt it down. All right. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Erin. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And I also want a picture of eating large quantities of barbecue so I can be really jealous, all right?
It's a shame. I gave away my selfie stick last month at Marjorie's Ride.
Did you actually own a selfie stick? I've ever seen them is at Disney World, and it's all the Japanese people have selfie sticks.
My sister-in-law gave one to my husband for Christmas, and we just kind of looked at that. And Marjorie said she was going to do like a white elephant raffle, and it immediately went in.
It was the Asians, the only ones that I ever saw were the Asians at Disney World that have the selfie sticks.
Well,
and they all have them.
Yeah, she loves Japanese things, so that would explain why she would. That explains a lot.
I don't know. I don't think I could carry a selfie stick around. I don't think I could do it. I don't know what that says, you know. It says something, and I don't know.
A nice college student ended up with it. It's probably more appropriate.
Yeah, that's probably more appropriate. You're right. You're right. Well, this has been fun. Thank you so much. Again, where can people find the website?
It's www.natrc.org.
And, of course, the best way to listen to Horses in the Morning, the recorded version, is to get it on our app. Go to Horse Radio Network in the App Store, iOS or Android, and just download it. It's free, it's easy, and it's the simplest way to listen to all 8 of our shows on there, or some of our weekly shows. And then Horses in the Morning always shows up around noontime after the show is done. And you can't listen to the live version there yet. We're hoping that someday we'll be able to do that, but so far Blog Talk doesn't have the ability to do that yet. So we're hoping to fix that at some point. But for right now, you can listen live on the website a lot of people do. And most people do listen to the recorded version later in the day. Of course, all of our other shows you can find at horseradionetwork.com. We have a bunch of them. Jennifer just recorded with Dr. Wendy last night, the driving radio show, and, of course, the eventing radio show, Dressage. We have a pile of different shows. So take a look for them at horseradionetwork.com. Well, that's about it for this month. Thank you, Alice, and you have a terrific ride.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Jen. I hope to have a wonderful month riding.